From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now locked into WKAR's Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. We've got a ton to talk about, like we do each and every Monday here on our airwaves, as we try to recap the weekend that was in Mid-Michigan sports and beyond. On today's show, we will chat about the college football landscape that has been shaken up a bit, to say the least, due to the three of the top four teams in the college football realm all falling. That's right, we had three upsets by the number 2, 3, and 4 teams. How does that shake up the Associated Press College Football Poll? Well, we'll give you the updated rankings that were released yesterday. We will also talk about College Game Day. That's right, ESPN's, one of ESPN's flagship shows. They will be coming to Kalamazoo this weekend. Can you believe that? That's right, to Western Michigan University. They will be rowing the boat. That's right, PJ Fleck's team continues to gain popularity, still standing at an undefeated record of 10-0 after this past weekend. We'll talk about what that means for the school, as well as the Western Michigan College football program. And get this, folks, we love to bring different interviews to the show here and there, right? On today's show, we will invite a dear friend to our airwaves that will recap the big UFC fight, UFC 205, Conor McGregor versus Eddie Alvarez. Conor McGregor, such a compelling personality in the sporting realm, not just in UFC. Ronald Mann, former United States Army emergency room medic, who also had a great career in MMA. He will join us on the show to break down that fight and the future of UFC. You don't want to miss that. And on the back end of the show, we will bring to you coverage from the Tom Izzo press conference that was held at the Breslin Center this afternoon, as he will preview the Michigan State and Kentucky game that will take place out in the NY tomorrow. And we'll have weekend winners for you. If you want to be a part of our airwaves, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. But hey, you know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, we start with the MSU women's basketball team. For the second straight year, the number 22-ranked MSU women's basketball squad has started the year undefeated. On Friday, the Spartans topped Davidson 70-34 for their first win. The team's second win came yesterday when they defeated Wyoming 63-51. On Sunday, the scoring was led by senior Tori Jankowska, who recorded her 26th career 20-point game. MSU will look to improve their streak to 3-0 at home tomorrow when they take on Southern University at the Briz. Tip-off is set for 7 p.m. And on tomorrow's Current Sports, we'll be giving away tickets, actually, to that game, all right? You want to stay tuned to find out how you can win. The Michigan Wolverines men's basketball team improved to 2-0 on the year with a 77-65 win over IUPUI at home. The game was back and forth in the first half until a late surge put U of M up for good. Four Michigan players hit double digits in scoring, while Zach Irvin led the way with 15 points. Michigan will look to go 3-0 on the year when they host Marquette this Thursday. The list of Spartan football players done for the season keeps on growing after another two hits. Redshirt freshie left guard Tyler Higbee broke his ankle in the third quarter of the Michigan State win over Rutgers on Saturday. Junior linebacker John Reschke is also done for the season, according to head coach Mark D'Antonio. Reschke has been out since the Spartans hosted Wisconsin with an ankle injury he suffered in the game. Ankle injuries, oh, they can be nagging, folks. All right, following a Tuesday victory over Kent State, Western Michigan University became the first team in the nation to reach 10 wins after an upset Saturday, in college football. Only two undefeated teams remain, that being Alabama as well as WMU. Now, head coach PJ Fleck has talked about the numbers that they've accomplished this year, I should say, in reference to things that the program has never done. This weekend, he can add another to the list as College Game Day will travel to Kalamazoo. How about that? ESPN heading to Kalamazoo, where the Broncos will host Buffalo at 3:30 p.m. on Saturday afternoon. And as I stated, a wild week in college football that led to a shakeup in the AP top college football teams. Alabama, still numero uno. No brano there, right? After surviving the mayhem, they beat Mississippi State. Wasn't even close. Ohio State takes over the number two spot. Louisville at number three. And following their loss to Iowa, Michigan only dropped to number four. A bit of a surprise there for me. And the top five is rounded out by Clemson. Now, the Big Ten still represented well with Wisconsin at number six, Penn State at number nine, Nebraska at 19. And along with Alabama, as the only undefeated team in the nation, again, WMU remained at 14 in the poll. The number 15th-ranked Michigan State women's volleyball team treated a record sellout crowd at Jennison Fieldhouse to a 3-1 defeat over in-state rivals number 17 U of M on Saturday night. Now, MSU and U of M split the first two sets, but the Spartans would finish off the game, taking the next two. MSU's scoring was led by junior Autumn Bailey, who had a season-best 19 kills, 20 digs. The Spartans' win streak increases to six, and their record improves to 23-5 and 12-4 in the Big Ten Conference. They sit fourth in the conference standings with four matches left to play. It will be on the road this Friday, November 18th, against Minnesota at 8 p.m. And let me tell you, folks, it was an electric atmosphere at Jennison Fieldhouse for that Michigan State and U of M game on Saturday night. I was in the house, and oh my goodness, my ears are still ringing from all of the noise that was in Jennison. Spartan Nation, you came out and supported. It was just a great atmosphere. I'll talk about it later on during our weekend winners. All right, it's semifinals week in high school football playoffs, and get this. Now that the dust is cleared, this past Friday and Saturday, we only have one local team left in the running for a state championship, that being the Pawamo Westphalia Pirates. How about that? Shocking that Ithaca lost. They fell to Frankenmuth. Now again, they moved up a division. And also, DeWitt fell this past weekend as well. They were a favorite to possibly get to Ford Field as well. So, shocking stuff, folks. That's how it goes. Semifinal action will take place this weekend, and throughout the week, we'll have previews and coverage leading up to the weekend that is. All right, after an off day, the Detroit Pistons are back in action tonight, looking to improve their undefeated home record of 2-5-0, as they take on the Oklahoma City Thunder. That's right, Russell Westbrook comes to the Palace. The 6-4 Thunder are currently on a three-game losing streak, while the 5-5 Pistons look to improve above 500 using their momentum from their 106-95 win over Denver on Saturday, a win that snapped three-game losing streak and 0-5 start on the road. Tip-off is set for 7:30 p.m. tonight. And in his defeat of Eddie Alvarez at Madison Square Garden, Conor McGregor became UFC's first two-division champ. After his second round win, McGregor claimed the UFC's lightweight title and was already the reigning featherweight champ following his knockout of Jose Aldo. Now, the UFC has yet to decide if McGregor will be able to defend both of his division titles yet. And later on, again, we will invite Ronald Mann to the show, former local MMA fighter who has an interesting take on McGregor becoming UFC's first two-division champ. He will break down the Alvarez and McGregor fight. You don't want to miss that, all right? That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. You know the number to call in if you want to be a part of our airwaves. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Shoot us a comment there. I'll read it live here on our airwaves, or even tweet us at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR_sports. Without further ado, let's get this baby cracking.
From North Carolina, from 33 yards, and a walk-off winner. Right through, and the Hawkeyes have stunned the Wolverines. Michigan unbeaten no more. But the Wolverines challenged on the road for the first time. Don't pass the test. And the Hawkeyes, who've been questioned and criticized. Very few of these folks mobbing the team believe this would happen tonight, Kirk. What a scene.
Not after last Saturday. This is a heck of a moment for Kirk Ferentz and for this Iowa football team.
Empty backfield. Darnold looking in the end zone. Touchdown! SC! How about that? They bring everybody. Darnold. Do it. The USC Trojans win it 26-13.
For Chris Blewett to try to knock off number two at Clemson. All the way and good. Blewett got it. And in his stunned disbelief inside Death Valley, they have done the unthinkable. They have rocked Clemson's world and shaken up all of college football.
Yeah! We still got it! Yeah! Hey, first of all, one hell of a team win, guys. You talk about back and forth, offense scoring up points, a fourth down, third down short, stop, fourth down shot. You think about that fourth. That fourth down stop will go down in history, guys. That win and field goal will go down in history. All of the guys that made plays today, guys, think about all the plays made. The big catches we had on offense, the big plays we had on offense, the three interceptions. Guys, it's one hell of a game that you will never, ever forget. Knocked off the number two team. We shocked the world!
Oh, man. That's how you start a show. Did that just light a fire up under all of you out there? Oh, my goodness. Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Happy, happy Monday. It is November 14th, 2016. I really hope that you all are starting off the week with a bang, all right? It's Monday, back to work, back to school, back to the grind. And we plan on taking a bit of the edge off the grind a bit, like we do each and every weekday afternoon here on WKAR's Current Sports. What a weekend it was in the world of sports. I mean, the AP Top 25 ranked number 2, 3, and 4 teams. All fell. Are you kidding me? Number 2, Michigan. Lost at Iowa. Number 3, Clemson. Lost at home to Pittsburgh. Number 4, Washington, fell at home to USC. Crazy, insane in the membrane, folks. All three teams were undefeated. All three teams fell to cross-division rivals. And it was the first time that numbers 2 through 4 in the AP Top 25 have lost in the same day. Same exact day. Dating all the way back to 1985. And here's some food for thought for you here. Get this. To that day back in 1985, when teams 2 through 4 lost, Jim Harbaugh was the head quarterback. He was the starting QB of an undefeated, number 2 ranked Michigan team when it visited none other than, You guessed it, Iowa. Yeah, then number one on October 19th, 1985. Harbaugh lost to that Iowa team just like his own players did on Saturday in a close, low-scoring game ending because of a late field goal. How crazy is that, right? Talk about coming full circle. That's crazy. So in today's Current Sports, of course, we are going to be diving into the college football world and recapping the weekend that was in college football and discussing, you know, what exactly those three losses now will do in the minds of the college football playoff committee. When they evaluate that, where will those three teams sit right now? Where will Michigan, you know, drop down to? Where will Clemson drop down to? Where will Washington drop down to? I can just guess, you know, with Washington being that number four team, they're going to drop out of that top four. I believe so. When it comes to the latest AP rankings, though, Michigan still sits in there. Yeah, at number four, actually. Losing to an Iowa team that haven't had a great year. They're not even competing for, you know, booking a ticket to Indy to compete in the Big Ten Championship out in the West. So a bit, very surprising there that Michigan only dropped to four in the Associated Press CFB poll. But again, another pair of rankings come out. Another bunch of a whole stack of rankings will come out for the College Football Playoff Committee tomorrow on national TV. So I'm curious to see what they will do in regards to those three losses. Again, and it's a no-brainer right now that Alabama is the clear numero uno team in the college football world. I mean, they just embarrassed Mississippi State. Just embarrassed them, folks. Wasn't even close. I mean, Mississippi State didn't even show up in the building. They need Dak Prescott back from my Dallas Cowboys right now because that was Oogle. Oh, my God. And how about before I go into spiel, I had a great weekend, by the way. Thanks for asking, folks. A fantastic weekend. Got to see my Cowboys right now have won 8 straight games for the first time since 1977. Oh, my goodness. I feel like throwing a party right here in Studio S right now. Just me. You know, me and my Cowboys gear on. I can't believe I didn't wear any Cowboys gear today. It's crazy. But Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott, I mean, two of the best rookies in the league on the same team. Are you kidding me? So I'm pretty excited about that. And hey, Michigan State football got a win on Saturday against Rutgers. Round of MSU football. You did it. You finally got one. Oh, but we've been waiting for this for a long, long time. 7 weeks to be exact. All right? And now again, temper the emotions just a bit. You guys just heard me. For those that have been tuning in up until we hit the air at 1 o'clock, you heard me on Current State this morning. That was replayed at 12 noon on AM 870. And I sat down with Mark Bayshore this morning, and we kind of broke down that game. And before I even went on the spiel about how Michigan State was able to pull out that win at Spartan Stadium, a win is a win, and a win always feels good. Don't get me wrong, but they were playing Rutgers. All right, you're supposed to win that game. But heck, we've been saying that for a long time when looking at the opposition for Michigan State football week after week after week. They're supposed to win, right? They're supposed to beat Maryland. They're supposed to go out there and beat blah, blah, blah. And they've been chalking up L's left and right. So they're playing Rutgers, a team that had an identical 2-7 record approaching that game. Rutgers also winless in the Big Ten. They remain winless yet again. And what really stood out to me in that game was Michigan State's running attack. I mean, I've said this all year. When it comes to Tyler O'Connor needs the comfort of an efficient run attack because that allows him to kind of just sit back, chillax, and all the pressure isn't on his arm. You can hand it off to a Holmes or a London or a Scott and let them get first downs with their feet. LJ Scott ran 20 times for 122 yards in the TD. Gerald Holmes and Madre London each had 9 carries for 52 yards. Overall, Michigan State had 277 yards on the ground, the most they've had on the ground all season. Yeah, that's a season high, folks. 277, knocking on the door of 300 yards on the ground. When it comes to Tyler O'Connor, I mean, he chillaxed for the most part. I mean, he only threw the football 15 times. That's it, folks. It's 15 times. Now, it was an efficient 15 times. I must say that. 15 times, 141, 3 touchdowns. Pretty good. Balance, thy name is Michigan State offense. At least against Rutgers. First defensive shutout. This is the thing that was probably most surprising to me. Not that Michigan State won. You're supposed to beat Rutgers. But the fact that they didn't allow that Rutgers offense to score not once. Not even a field goal, folks. Not even three. They put up a donut against Michigan State's defense. The first defensive shutout since 2013 for that MSU defense. And back in 2013, that's when they beat Purdue 14-0. Held Rutgers to just 149 yards of total offense. Forced 5 3 and outs. Had 2 INTs, one of which came from Captain Demetrius Cox, who I called out last week, you know? It was a bit of, I don't know what was going on the week prior, too, when you didn't see Cox out there for the coin toss, and, you know, it was Mark D'Antonio saying it's an internal matter when it comes to Demetrius Cox and what is happening as far as his leadership on the team. But, I mean, he goes out there, had a pick six. Fantastic. 2 INTs total for that defense. And they made Rutgers punt 9 times on the day. And heck, they did all of this without Mr. Malik McDowell. Malik McDowell didn't even suit up for that game. He's going through a rib and ankle situation right now. So you had true freshies, Josh King and Mike Panasiewicz come in, receiving their first career starts on that defensive line, and they held it down. Fantastic stuff. MSU, a win is a win. Celebrate this one. You know, Mark D'Antonio talked about in the post-game press conference how, you know, the locker room was pretty pumped up about it. Pretty pumped up just to get a W after suffering 7 straight weeks of not getting one. It had to feel good. It had to do a lot for the morale of the Michigan State football team. However, on Sunday, it was released by head coach Mark D'Antonio via his teleconference that he holds each and every Sunday, that redshirt freshie starting left guard. As you heard in our headliners, Tyler Higbee. Another ankle. What is up with the ankles, man? Wrap those babies up, man. That's crazy. Tyler Higbee broke his ankle in the third quarter, out for the year, and then junior linebacker John Reschke. He will miss the remainder of the year with also an ankle injury against Wisconsin that he suffered on September 24th. So Higbee and Reschke, done for the season. Now, again, just 2 games left, so it's not like they got to play 5 or 6 games here. But, you know, two weeks left here in a year. I mean, hey, they've been treading water for a while now. So you play Ohio State at home this weekend. And then the following week, you go play Penn State on the road. That's a tall order, I must say. A really tall order, because Ohio State, they look like they've got their mind right now. The Buckeyes look like they're fully focused right now. OSU has actually won their past 2 games over Maryland and Nebraska by a combined score of 124 to just 6. 124 to just 6. OSU, if you remember, lost to Penn State in October. So we saw that matchup in October, and now Michigan State has to go out and play both of those teams. Of course, for OSU, that loss to the Nittany Lions is the only loss that the Buckeyes have. Penn State has only lost to Pittsburgh in that fabulous rivalry game. And again, you heard Pat Narduzzi, former defensive coordinator for the Michigan State football team, now head coach at Pitt. You heard that speech he gave that gave me chills when I heard it. It was fantastic locker room speech after knocking off Clemson. They've had some big upsets. They beat, again, Penn State earlier on in the season. And, you know, Pittsburgh has been acting as spoiler for a lot of teams this year. So congrats to Pat Narduzzi. He's doing a fantastic job out there at Pitt. But going back to Penn State, they've only lost to Pitt and Michigan. Two good teams. Two good teams. What James Franklin has done out there is fantastic, and I think we've turned the chapter now from the whole Joe Pa and Jerry Sandusky scandal that was, right? I mean, that sent shockwaves through that university. Penn State is back, and they look really, really good. For me, sitting back here on the mic here and evaluating those two games, I don't see Michigan State winning either. Just logically speaking here, I just don't. Ohio State right now outscores opponents 46.5 to 12.7 this year. Then you look at redshirt freshie running back Mike Weber, who just needs 65 yards to reach 1,000 on the year. That's pretty impressive. So impressive that the only other players in Buckeye history to do that are Robert Smith back in 1990 and Maurice Claret. You guys remember that name, right? Claret was a beast back in 2002. So I don't see the Spartans winning both of those games, but I will say this. I think that MSU is competitive. Call in, folks, to be a part of our airwaves. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Let's go to line one right now. We've got Dave from Wyoming that wants to weigh in on some college football and even some college basketball. Dave, how you doing?
Good. Quickly on the basketball, we'll get to football. Is the end of that Arizona game showed why MSU has freshmen.
And yeah.
Play that game or a similar ending in late February, March, I think Josh Langford has got much better defensive position. And to me, I watched that and I just thought, hey, this is a bunch of freshmen playing a lot faster game than they've ever played before. And it showed. Nothing wrong with it. I thought they did better than I thought they would. But, you know, I don't know what you think about that part. I just think that Michigan State's freshmen got to adapt to the speed of the game and then hopefully don't get tired towards the end of the season. You know, that's what you get with freshmen.
Dave, I agree. And again, you said it best right there. They got a lot of young pups on this team, even though they're great players. Don't get me wrong. And we saw Miles Bridges just do what we've seen Miles Bridges do dating back to summer league. He's fantastic. He's so athletic. He can do multiple things. But defensively is where this team has to get better. And you saw Kadeem Allen for Arizona. I mean, he grabbed the basketball and went from the right side all the way to the bucket. He goes right by Langford. Miles Bridges comes in to help, but he's a bit late contesting the basket. And you look at, even before that, you know, Kenny Goins is near the top of the key where he should have been flanked down in the paint to help out and play some help defense. Those wrinkles will get ironed out, but MSU has to play better defense if they want to stop with the big dogs, Dave. I agree.
Well, going back, my thumb got tired Saturday night because I was watching LSU, Arkansas. The Red Wings were able to stop watching real quick.
Right. Yeah, I believe that was what, 5-0 against Montreal? Yeah.
And because my oldest is a Hawkeye grad, I have a vested interest because I spent thousands at that school. But
right.
I won some money on that game because I bought that diehard Michigan fans who actually are grads that this was going to be a trap game, and those bets were made in August.
Okay, right.
Because, hey, like it or not, Michigan has several key players who are freshmen. Mm-hmm. They still had a new defensive coordinator. And Iowa City, Kinnick Stadium is a tough place to play anyway at night. I don't think there's this college campus that hates Michigan any more than Ohio State and Michigan State and Iowa. There is no love lost there. And some quick things that I'll get off your radio. One, I think the offensive coordinator for Iowa did a great job because if you notice, Peppers and a lot of those other guys, they were doing a lot of chasing because of the cutbacks and the counter plays. And that's a very aggressive, you know, very aggressive defense. Brown's got them playing over there in Ann Arbor. But they didn't do real well on the cutbacks. They didn't do well on comeback routes because they are so aggressive that they were taking themselves out of plays. So those quick hitters and those counter plays were going for 8-10 yards way too often. And that didn't expect. I also think Iowa's defensive coordinator, fellow Spartan Parker, did a great job of identifying the weak spots in Michigan's line. That ended up with a safety, and that ended up with a, that also ended up with some great stops. And I think State is out for the year. They say he isn't, but there's all kinds of – Harbaugh will never say anything because he doesn't even release a depth chart. But right. I really think they're down to Okorn now. And if Okorn wasn't good enough to beat out Ruddock and Okorn wasn't good enough to beat out Spate, there's something going on that Okorn just isn't as good as those two guys. That's going to affect them. And I agree with you. I think Penn State's going to be like the bridesmaid if Washington can win out.
Right. I agree.
Because,
yep.
Because, you know, one, we learned defense rules, ask Mississippi State, ask Michigan, and really the defense, Clemson couldn't stop the run all night. But and USC's defense shut down that high-powered Washington offense. But if Washington could win against, I think, Washington State this weekend or Colorado, and then they got to play Washington State, and then they got to get through, I don't know how you can deny a one-loss Pac-12 team.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got Louisville sitting on the outside looking in because they're not going to play in their championship game.
Nope. Yep, that hurts
them. And if it comes down to Louisville, Ohio State, I'm sorry, royalty wins.
Right.
You know?
They're
so
putting
Ohio
in the Buckeyes.
State's going to win.
Yeah.
Penn State may find themselves, they have to win probably against Wisconsin down in Indianapolis, or the team that's in the Final Four is not going to be a team that was in Indianapolis. And that's, you know, that's just not supposed to work out that way. And we'll talk to you later. Bye.
Dave, thank you. That was a great call, by the way. And, Dave threw around a couple scenarios that I'm going to get to later on in the show when it comes to how this whole Final Four can play out. And, again, it makes me pull out my hair sometimes because it's becoming so impossible, especially with what took place on Saturday. It's becoming so impossible to dwindle this down to just four teams. Because you want to expand this team because there are so many teams that I think when it's all said and done, the dust settles on this college football year that you can make a case for. There's going to be a lot of teams that you can make a case for, especially considering now that we saw numbers 2, 3, and 4 all go down on the same day. It opens the door and makes it even more complicated. So we'll get to that, and I'll also elaborate on more so on my thoughts on that Michigan and Iowa game because there was a coaching blunder or two that I have to call out Jim Harbaugh for that eventually led to their demise in the closing moments in that Iowa upset. We'll get to that and more. Let's hit our first break, though. When we come back, we will chat with our dear friend Ronald Mann, former MMA fighter, also former United States Army emergency room medic. He's going to break down what took place in the world of UFC this past weekend. Exciting stuff. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, asking all of you out here to call in and give your thoughts on the college football world. I'm curious to know, who are your top four teams in college football right now? Considering the madness, the insanity that took place on Saturday, where numbers 2, 3, and 4 all fell, who do you push up? And how far do you drop those three teams that lost? We all know Alabama numero uno. It's Alabama and then everybody else. But Michigan in the AP is still a top four team. And I still believe this. Michigan has their goals still in front of them. All right? The Wolverines still have their goals in front of them. They play Indiana on Saturday and then go to OSU for that huge finale, right? Wilton Spate has got to play better, though. Has got to play better than what he did against Iowa. First true road test, and Michigan fails at it. Wilton Spate, 11 of 26 for 103 yards, threw an interception. He was sacked twice, completed just 42.3% of his passes. That was a season low for Wilton Spate. That can't happen. Inexcusable. If Michigan wants to be in that number at the end of the year, Wilton Spate is going to have to play better than that. And now, as you heard our caller Dave from Wyoming talk about before that first break, I don't know how healthy Wilton Spate is now. Well, we saw him with that arm. You know, he took a lot of shots on Saturday, and we saw him laboring with that arm. And, you know, even in multiple publications that I read following that loss, you know, they were saying that Wilton Spate, he was favoring it, and he was kind of holding it like it was in an imaginary sling. So we just don't know how healthy he is. But if he isn't, that's going to hurt. But Michigan still, logically here, if they went out and they beat Ohio State and go to Indy and win the Big Ten championship, I mean, Michigan, without a doubt, will be in the college football playoff despite the loss to Iowa. But, hey, anything can happen from week to week to week, as we just saw this past Saturday. Folks, we're gonna switch up the mood just a bit here. We still want to take your calls, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. We're going to shift gears and talk about another big event that took place over the weekend. And we don't talk about it a lot, but it's a sport that you just can't ignore because it's growing and growing and growing, I feel like, by the month, let alone the year, right? And that's UFC. UFC is so compelling to me, and many people out there feel like it may be too brutal and it turns them off. And, you know, there's some out there that really enjoy it and they love how brutal it is. Catch-22 for viewers out there. But no matter how you put it, it is compelling television. It really is. And I think Dana White has done a great job of marketing the UFC brand over the years. What we saw over the weekend on Saturday night was UFC 205. And we saw a man whose name is the biggest in the sport right now, that being the Irishman, Mr. Conor McGregor. He laid waste to a battered Eddie Alvarez on Saturday night and then, as he always does, brazenly demanded his second, yes, second, making history, folks, his second UFC championship belt. Isaac, I believe we have a bite queued up from the Irishman. Can we hear from him?
Conor McGregor, the first man ever to hold two titles simultaneously. How does this all feel to you?
Where the f*** is my second belt? I've already got this one. Where's the second one at? Cheap f***. $4.2 billion this company was sold for. Where's that second belt? Go backstage and grab that f***ing belt somewhere. F*** out of here. I only want him to try to take that one on me already. What the f***?
Conor, this is a huge accomplishment tonight. Was there anything at all surprising about it to you?
Not one bit. They're not on my level. You've got to have size, reach, length. You've got to have some attributes. If you come in any way equal to me, I'm going to rip your whole head off. And that's it. I tell that every time. Eddie's a solid competitor. Eddie's a warrior. But he shouldn't have been in here with me. And that's just the truth of it.
I love that. That's my first time hearing that snippet, the post-fight snippet of Conor McGregor beating Alvarez in UFC 205. I mean, he is such a compelling personality. And you heard him. He talks so much trash. And then, you know, it gets me because he talks all that trash and he says, oh, he's a heck of a competitor. And then he goes on this rant. I love Conor McGregor. And he makes you want to watch. So right now, let's dive into the world of MMA with our very own Ronald Mann, who's a dear friend of the show. He's been on multiple times. He is a former United States Army emergency room medic while serving. Mann captured the career-wide Army Taekwondo Championship for his division. How cool is that, right? At the age of 24, during time off duty, though, he lost his leg in a motorcycle accident to help cope with the loss. He returned to martial arts for recovery, ultimately starting a new career. He has since retired, but still follows MMA closely. We now invite Ronald Mann to Current Sports. Ron, how you doing?
How you doing, my friend? Good to hear you.
It is always good chatting with you. And first off, I have to ask, because the last time we had you on, you were actually still active in mixed martial arts and were still competing. And I know, I remember when you made the decision to finally hang it up and call it a career and retire, you hit me up and let me know. And I told myself I wanted to get you on to talk about it. First off, I mean, how's retirement treating you, Ron? Is it still a bit surreal for you?
It's been about a year now, and it was pretty difficult at first to deal with. Like, that's 20 years of your life you put down. But it gets easier and easier by the day. I mean, you start getting back to the gym, training and teaching, doing little small competitions for submission stuff. But you always have in the back of your mind, just one more.
Now, Ron, what went into that? You know, you talk about how, you know, 20 years you've been involved with mixed martial arts. I mean, what went through your mind that eventually led to the decision to hang it up and call it a career?
Well, I mean, everybody gets caught with old age at some point. You put 20 years in this. This is a rough sport. I was exceptionally lucky to be able to extend my career this long. Most guys are in and out in 10 years. You just can't take that kind of beating year after year, and your body will hold up for it. That's why you see a lot of these guys turning to the PEDs to support their career. But, you know, I finally got to the point where I'd accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. I won the 170-pound title here in Lansing, and I knew I wasn't going to the UFC at that point. And, you know, it was time to look at another path, maybe think about having a family or something you can't do in the cage.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you that. I mean, what are you up to now, and how are you staying close to the sport? You just mentioned how, you know, you're trying to coach a bit. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I always love teaching the kids coming up, and there's a new fighter around every corner. That's the problem with MMA is even when you get to the top, then you got to keep fighting the best, and there's always somebody looking for your belt.
That is so true. Now, Ronald, I want to bring this up before we recap what took place in UFC 205 over the weekend. As I mentioned in the intro, you are a former United States Army emergency room medic. Veterans Day was last week. What does that day mean to you?
You know, my entire family's been in the Army. My great-great-grandfather was in the Civil War in the Indiana Militia, and we've all been in the Army since then. And, you know, it's a time for us to get together and celebrate what we did to serve this country. You know, it's for all of us. Memorial Day is a little bit different, where we honor our dead. But, you know, it's nice to be able to catch together and look at the past and then see the future, the young kids coming up, and if they're going to continue on with our footsteps. But it's always real nice. Both sides of my family, we've all been in the military.
That's fantastic stuff, and we thank you for your service, Ron. And I saw your Facebook post last week that really caught my eye. It showed a host of pins and badges from your time serving. And what are some of the pins that you've received during your time serving?
You know, we get the typical driving and shooting and all that kind of stuff. But the one that means the most, there was an MSM given to me, Military Service Medal. Guy wiped his bike out just before I got there, and we were off duty, but we dove right back in and tried to save his life, but he was gone already. And so you've got, you know, you're just jumping in, but you don't have any protective gear or anything like that. You're just trying to save another soldier's life. And we didn't do it, but we did the best we could, and they recognized that even though we weren't even supposed to be in the area, we just still stepped up and tried to save that young man's life.
Wow. Unbelievable stuff. And again, Ryan, we appreciate your service and all of the veterans out there listening right now, those part of the military who are serving or who have served, we really appreciate it. Moving on now, let's talk some UFC here now, Ryan. You know, following Saturday's mega UFC 205 event, which marked the organization's long-awaited New York City debut. That fighting ban has now been lifted, of course. UFC president Dana White said the pay-per-view event at Madison Square Garden, it broke numerous records. Now, chief among them was the UFC's pay-per-view record. Now, the UFC doesn't publicly disclose PPV buy rates, Ryan. However, White recently suggested that UFC 202 would likely outpace the previous record holder, UFC 100, which reportedly drew 1.6 million buys. And Dana is suggesting that UFC 205 this past weekend eclipsed even that. Are you surprised at how UFC seems to be growing by a record pace event after event? Or did you see this coming down the pike?
I'm not. Well, it first began, I wondered if it was going to stay for around for a while, if it was going to get regulated out. But this kind of fighting has been going on in primarily Japan, France, and Brazil long before UFC came around. And, I mean, it's always been popular. You want to see gladiators in there fighting as hard as they can. And it doesn't really get any cleaner than this. You know, two men in there, or women in there for that matter, with no protection, literally almost no rules, and just seeing who can hang and bang for the longest. It's not a team sport. It's not, you know, not about your padding, your equipment. It's about two people being raw right inside the cage. So if you can look at it as a pure, clean sport, then you can see why it's so popular.
And I go back to, of course, New York City finally lifting the ban from fighting in that area. And I got to ask you, because those who criticize the sport, they go, it seems like I'm hearing the same thing over and over. They go to the standpoint of the sport is just too brutal. What do you say to those that criticize the sport in that way? And do you understand where they're coming from?
I want to say I can see where they're coming from, but I truly can't. Because these are the same people that watch Sunday night football, who watch hockey. You know, these people want to see guys getting buried on the field, but they don't want to see the rawness of it. You know, even if a real bad hit goes off in football, you might see the replay every once in a while over there, but you're not going to see the true destruction that happens on the field with these guys on the professional level. I mean, they're animals out there. With UFC and MMA, it's just right there, and you have to recognize what it is. But to me, it's like I said, you're not dependent upon a team. It's just about when you step in the cage, it's you alone.
And Ron, you and I have talked about this dynamic from those that do criticize mixed martial arts. And we've talked about it and thrown around a few things. One of those including that those who do throw out those that criticism, they don't see the beauty in the sport. What are they missing? What is the beauty in mixed martial arts?
If you look at the pure skill of these guys in there fighting, it takes a long time. We all play football. We all play baseball growing up and think that we can be pros. But we don't learn how to fight growing up. And then when you've trained it for years and years and you see how clean these athletes are with their strikes and their submissions, how fast it goes, it's almost like what to me, it's like watching ballet. It's beautiful, man. It's to see two people dance around the ring, and at the same time, it has to be clean. You have to react to it. You can't plan on it like running a marathon. You plan it out, and it's repetitive motion, and swimming, it's repetitive motion. In the cage, somebody's trying to take your head clean off.
Now, this past Saturday's UFC 205 headliner, Ron, you heard the snippet from Conor McGregor, right? Featherweight champ McGregor, 21-3 in the MMA, 9-1 in the UFC. He became the first fighter in UFC history to simultaneously hold two belts when he dethroned lightweight title holder Eddie Alvarez via second round TKO. First off, I want to ask you this, because you heard the snippet and you heard how loud and candid and how much trash McGregor talks. Is McGregor the right man to be the face of the sport?
He is right now. You know, it's hard in MMA, it's hard to develop a fighter. So people watch him for years and come up and be fan favorites and have somebody to follow. You know, like I said, the sport's brutal and the turnover is real high, and there's always another fighter right around the corner for you. So he's put his work in, and he backs up what he has to say. His striking is absolutely unbelievable. His ability to range a person is ridiculous. But he also puts on a good show, and ultimately people are paying money for that. They want to see entertainment. They want to see a show, and he's exceptionally good at that.
Yeah, and you talk about people wanting to see a show. It seems like same thing in boxing. I mean, it seems like this happens quite often. I mean, a fighter who is just unfiltered with his mouth, and it's all about selling numbers, and we love to hate the villain, and we will tune in whether we like the villain or not. We've seen it in boxing. I mean, Floyd Mayweather was the same way. Heck, dating back to Muhammad Ali, I mean, he would sell, you know, record numbers for those that would tune in ratings-wise in the sport of boxing because he was just he had such a compelling tongue. Why does it always take a loud personality, Ron?
Well, I don't know, man. Maybe it doesn't really take a loud personality. It depends on who you are and what you can do as well. I mean, I was never a big smack talker. And when I was in the ring, I didn't need to. I let my words be entered in the ring when I'd go banging against somebody. But as an amputee, I had an opportunity to show people what we were capable of, so that created a huge following that I had. So you can talk smack, but if you can't follow it up in the ring, well, I mean, it doesn't make you the hell of a fighter. It just means that you can talk a bunch of junk. So when it comes down to it, everybody wants to see a good, clean fight.
That is so true. Now, again, McGregor, the first fighter to hold two titles simultaneously. Can you put it in perspective? When you watch McGregor fight, I mean, what makes him such a dynamic fighter when he's in the ring?
Well, he's so fast. I mean, his ability to react to the situation is absolutely amazing. But I talked about ranges, and it's not just fighting. People who swing in bars think that they can fight, but you can't truly fight until you've trained yourself in it. Once you get close enough to a person, there's the kicking, punching, kneeing, clinching range, and then ground fighting. And you have to be able to determine that. And you kind of get a sixth sense about, once you get close enough, this is where I can start attacking and defending from. And he has that ability to range a fighter to where he gets in and hits you before you can even realize what's happening to you. And it's when you try to tee off against somebody who's a really good counterpuncher, he's a lefty as well, so he comes out of the wrong side that you normally fight against. Mm-hmm. And his power, his striking power, I mean, he cuts down to 155. I want to see him at 170.
Very true. Now, when watching that fight against Alvarez, again, a second-round TKO, what sort of strategy did you see McGregor enacting, and what allowed him to get the upper hand against Alvarez?
Once he had him stunned, and he'd even predicted this. This is one thing that I do like about McGregor. I
don't Sounds really like Ali.
I don't care for people who talk smack, but he tells them when you're going to knock him out and what you're going to do to him, and then he makes it happen. That's how good this guy is. He's going to tell you what round he knocks you out in. That's embarrassing. But he talked about before the fight he was going to rearrange his face. He's going to hit him hard once, and if the guy is still standing, then he's going to rearrange Alvarez's face. And you can see it in the first round. He got dropped three times, didn't he, in the first round?
Yeah, yep.
And then you could just see it slowly progress to where once you hit him, knock him down first time, you start getting more confidence, you get more stamina and speed into it, more effectiveness of your striking because you have to get in there and bang on somebody. But you could see it coming in the second round. Alvarez tried hard, but he'd already been beaten. You almost can see him just crumbling under the flurry of McGregor.
Ron, what's his next challenge? Is there anybody out there that can give him a run for his money right now?
I think if he really wants to push himself, he'd have to step up to 170. In UFC and MMA, you cut a lot of weight. You know, you're getting down to real lightweights. It's unbelievable. I mean, for him to hold belts in two weight classes is unbelievable. It's unheard of. But in his weight classes now, they're going to have Diaz eventually. That's a huge money fight, but that won't happen up anytime soon because they're going to spread it out a little bit. Khabib is probably from Russia. He's probably his next fight that weight. It's going to be a puncher versus a ground and pound. Hopefully McGregor won't get caught on the ground by him because it might be a long night.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to if that fight happens. I will definitely look forward to seeing that. Ron, before I get you out of here, I love asking fighters this question because I find it so compelling. You talk about cutting weight. I want to know, when you were fighting, Ron, What is the craziest thing that you ever did to cut weight and make the weight for a fight?
I mean, I'm six foot one, and I walk around at 190, 200 mm-hmm. when I'm training, and I would cut down to 170 for all my fights. The lowest I've gone is 154.9, and I literally had to be helped up to the scale. I was so dehydrated and so lean, so thin. I mean, you get as low fat content as you can, and then just shred yourself water. I mean, it's not uncommon for guys to sit into a sauna for an hour or so at a time, skipping rope. Some guys will take diuretics and all kinds of stuff. But you know, if you don't, when you're on your water cut, it takes about 5 to 6 days to get cut down 20 pounds. Uh-huh. But it's a horrible thing because you got to still train. You're not getting water as much. You slowly decrease the water, taking these really hot steaming baths to help draw the water out of your muscles. And about day three, it really starts to suck.
Oh, boy, that sounds absolutely brutal. Well, I'll tell you what, Ryan, we got to have you on more often, my friend. When we talk UFC, we would love to have you back. How does that sound?
Sounds good, brother. I'll talk to you soon.
My man, Ronald Mann. Ryan, we'll chat with you, brother.
Thank you, bro.
Gotta love Ryan. I mean, again, former MMA fighter right here in the area, amputee. I mean, he was such a dynamic fighter to watch. And those who know about the MMA fighting scene, any of our listeners out there that got a chance to see Ryan fight, compelling stuff to say the least. All right, folks. Well, we have less than 3 minutes left in the show, and we love to close out each and every Current Sports by reflecting on the weekend that was in the world of sports. So much happening. So who exactly are our weekend winners? Here we go.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. And nothing's gonna ever keep you down. You're the best around. Nothing's gonna ever keep you down.
All right, less than 2 minutes here. You haven't heard from this brother all show. Right behind the glass, yes, he's alive. Isaac Constance, our engineer of WKAR's Current Sports. Isaac, reflect on the weekend, brother. I've talked enough, man.
Oh, yeah. No, I just got to say, Conor McGregor, of course, plaudits to him because, wow, what a performance against Eddie Alvarez. Second round, knocked him down four times before that. That was outstanding. Also, I think they finally got the college football playoff rankings correct. So credit to them for that. And, hey, Louisville, the team I've always been for, right back in the picture.
Yeah, they certainly are. I also want to call out the MSU women's basketball team. Again, as I stated in the headliners, they are 2-0 right now. They beat Davidson on Friday, Wyoming yesterday. They will play Southern University tomorrow. I'm really looking forward to the MSU men's basketball game tomorrow against Kentucky out in New York at the Champions Classic. We'll have more coverage from that. Also, a quick update from Tom Izzo's presser this afternoon. He reinstated that Josh Langford is healthy and Gavin Schilling has had surgery. He still believes, though, that Schilling has a long way to go and does not plan on having him until the start of the Big Ten season. Quote, if that. That does it for today's Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care. Have a fantastic Monday afternoon and be easy, people.